Welcome to another episode of The King's Couch. I'm your host, Sulo King. And today I have a very special guest. I have Travis Wheeler, who's a musician and a veteran. And I haven't seen him in a very long time, and he's got quite the story to tell. Travis, how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay. Glad to hear that. Well,
when was the last time I saw it was a show at Brick by Brick, I think.
I want to say, no, actually, I think it was Troy Cook's house for that party, for the video shoot. Either that or briefly at Brick by Brick.
That it was a show.
It was right before COVID. I know that much.
Yeah. What is his name? He's like a solo. Danko Jones.
Danko Jones. Yes,
I think we were at that show.
That's right. And Danko Jones was at my recording studio that I had earlier during the day. Tim Piles from 91X brought him through for his FTW Piles sessions. And yeah, it was.
I love Danko Jones.
It was an interesting day and an interesting show. And Danko is very down to earth and plays great music, so really can't go wrong there. But yeah, it's great to see you again, Travis. Great to see your smile after everything you've been through. And before we get into that, let's go back to the beginning, like I do with all my guests.
Sure.
And how you got into music, what inspired you? And you know, was it your parents? Do you have any siblings? Let's talk a little bit about your life.
So when I was a kid, I was born in 85, so right off the bat, like, you've got the late 80s of music like bombarding me. Both my parents did listen to quite a bit of music. And then around 90 or so, my mom had decided that she liked women now. So her new girlfriend after my parents split was a musician and was really into. She was actually Dale Krantz's vocal coach, who is the wife of Gary Rossington. So, like, met Gary when I was super young and didn't really know the significance of, like, oh, this guy is in Lynyrd Skynyrd.
That's awesome.
Her name is Rachel.
And what city and state?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay,
is where I grew up.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was born in New York. And there was a hurricane in 1985, like that fall. And my parents were like, let's move to Georgia from Long Island, New York. So there was this little town in metro Atlanta, Kennesaw. That's where my parents decided to buy a house at. I lived in that house even after. So my parents split. My dad went off and got like a condo duplex thing, and I stayed in that house in Kennesaw and grew up. And it was a great town, great place to be. You know, I went back there too during the pandemic, and a lot of things had changed, but it was still kind of like, you know, home.
Right. Now, how long had it been since you've been back?
A long time. In terms of being back, like, I think 2014 was like the last time that I visited, even, and then I left. When I left when I joined the Marine Corps, it was 2005.
Okay.
So quite a while ago. And then that's when I came to San Diego.
Right.
And spent most of my time in San Diego from 05 to now. I'm San Diego right now.
Awesome. What was the first instrument that really resonated with you?
At first, it was keys. Started out with keys, like with Rachel showing me just like little things on the piano. And, we had a Yamaha Clavinova. It was something that my mom really wanted to get because it had lights. It didn't have like light up keys, but, and you gotta think this is like the late 80s, right?
So, like, right.
It had like these little, like, not even LEDs, like just lights above the key. And it wouldn't do like the whole player piano thing where the keys go down, but it would like play the song if you just wanted it. Like, I remember there was this she wanted to play Entertainer so bad. I forget how it goes, but like it's a particular piece. And then you had like this book, this music book with a like cartridge on it, and you would put it in this little cartridge receptacle, and then the lights, it would coincide with the piano, and the lights would go off above the keys where you needed to play. So it was like this like sort of like trainer kind of piano that would play the song too. If you just wanted to put it in player mode, you'd just play it. But yeah, I had one of those things growing up, and would sit there and mess around with it. And then guitar. I mean, I remember I heard Longview sitting in a... My mom was also a foster parent. So my biological mom was that I lived with all growing up. Oster also was a foster kid or foster parent to all kinds of children. Like, and typically like between 13 and 17 year old girls, and we'd have like seven of them at a time, like in the house. And what that would do is they would bring their boyfriends around. And then like, I was growing up with like this older crowd. And now you think like this is the early 90s. So, you know, all the cool grunge stuff, you know, obviously Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins and Pearl Jam and then a little bit of hip hop influence too, because that was still going on. Like I remember the Snoop Dogg Doggy Style. I remember looking at that like tape cover or whatever and just being like, man, this is like, I don't know exactly what's going on here, but it's like dirty, but
I remember that feeling yeah. too. I'm old enough where I, like it came out and I had it on tape.
You yeah, know what I mean? Man, it's like
I remember my basketball coach playing that big title track, Snoop. What I can't even
yeah
remember the name of the song, but yeah. You know, Snoop Doggy Dog, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? But I was already kind of into rap a little bit. I had heard The Chronic.
Yeah.
You know, N.W.A. was the first album that got me in trouble at school.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that moment in seventh grade. but yeah, I know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah. And so all of that was just all around all the time. And I would get hand-me-downs like, oh, I don't want this tape anymore. And I remember when I was 8 years old, I got like my first bitch in stereo. It was like, it wasn't like my parents had like the old school compartmentalized, you know, big rack. This looked like that with like the separator thing in between each, you know, you'd have like the receiver, I'm doing air quotes, that had like the EQ on it or whatever. And then, but it was just a really cool thing. And then at the top, it had like a turntable. It looked like a turntable, but it was actually like a three disc changer, which was really cool to me because I could just be like, oh, yeah, switch the disc.
Right. Yeah. That was high tech at the time.
For an 8 year old, too. Yeah. And just balling.
Right.
And then, yeah, and I'd get their either hand me down stuff or I'd sneak into their rooms and, you know, like, just, you know, borrow something and like, you know, just like back then you dub it, right? You wouldn't rip it. You would just dub it from either one tape to another, or you could put it in the recording deck and then record the CD and it would be a little bit off. And things that I would like learn about later on, like, oh, I've got to tune up my guitars a couple cents to play along to things that I've ripped off the radio.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so that was all like early on and getting into guitar. Yeah. That's what I was going back to. My parents were foster parents. I remember I was sitting in the parking lot in front of D-Facts, ironically, like I was left in the car in front of child services or whatever. Well, my mom like did whatever business she had to do because, you know, but it was early 90s, so maybe leaving an 8-year-old in the car alone wasn't like that big of a deal. The windows at least were cracked. I remember hearing Longview and just being like, this is the coolest music I've ever heard. What is that? I love those guitars. And then, so that was 8. And then by 10, I had a guitar in my hands, but I was really shocked that I wasn't automatically good at it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was when I picked up guitar. That's kind of what led me to singing. I never made it out of being a rhythm player, you know. And you just got to find like what instrument calls out to you the most, you know.
Yeah, and guitar is just, I remember I would have imaginary shows in my room, and like
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
Did you ever make tapes? Like record yourself like you're on a talk show or a radio show or something? Me and my buddies would do that all the time in our room.
I never did. Well, I never had like a tape recorder even.
Oh wow.
Maybe that's what, like I had, like I think I had like some kind of baller stuff like the stereo, and I remember I had a computer like a old 286, like, you know, super old like floppy disk computer, but I never had like a video camera or anything.
Okay.
But yeah.
Like a boombox, like the dual deck boomboxes. Remember those?
That's
how I used to make those tapes.
Oh, okay.
I was able to record stuff off the radio and like I could dub them over.
Right.
That was pretty cool. Or even like I remember even in the late 90s, I still have a tape of when I would record rehearsals. Instead of using like a four track, I would somebody had given me like it was almost like a Walkman, but
okay.
It had a mic built into it.
Oh,
and you could record that way. It was like a field recorder.
Oh, got it. Okay.
It was pretty badass. I wish I still had it. You know, maybe if I look in my storage, I can find it. But
that's so interesting.
The quality of recording, that analog feel that it would give you, was just amazing.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And yeah, I was able to record rehearsals back then before I could, you know, scrounge up the money to actually go cut the track for real in the studio.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah. So, do you have any actual siblings, or are you the only child?
No,
or?
Yeah, I'm the only child. I've got a stepsister also. So my dad remarried, and I've got a stepsister.
What about your foster brothers, sisters?
If we flash forward, so 10, I've got the guitar in my hands. I put it down, and I remember my dad got it for me, and I remember I had this box fan, and it fell over, and it put a big gash in the face of it. And I was terrified that my dad was get like so mad at me because number one, I'm like not even playing the guitar and he bought it for me. And then two, I didn't take care of it. You know, I didn't take care of it well enough to like, now it's got this big gash in it. But then I had a foster brother named Bo, and he came down from like somewhere in the Pacific Northwest he called my mom and he was like having some rough times. So he came around. That was fall of 97.
Okay.
And he had an acoustic guitar and he showed me some chords and then boom, it was like, I know how to play guitar now. Like it was instantaneous, but like a week later I was, because of my practicing in my room with the shows, like I unknowingly like learned every rock and roll strum pattern that there was because I would like try to like do it for real. Like, okay, like, this is what I'm hearing.
So you play by ear?
Yeah, I can play by ear. I can read music too.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely like picked up strum patterns already from like air guitaring in my room, not even knowing what I'm doing. But then as soon as I did get some left hand, you know, knowledge going on, the right hand just, you know, clicked and followed suit. And so that was when I was 12. And then I got my, an acoustic guitar that year, and then taught myself for a year and got pretty good, and then finally set up lessons, and that was gonna be the 12th of December in 1998, and my mom passed away when I was 13 that Friday, the 11th, and she unknowingly, I didn't know that she had an electric guitar for me on layaway for Christmas that year. So my dad had found out and, you know, just followed it through. And I didn't get to go to that first lesson, but my dad picked up the bill and followed it through with the same instructor that I had met with my mom a couple weeks before. Mm. And I had my my first Squire Affinity Strat player pack thing, that everybody gets. And,
yeah.
But I thought I was so cool because I was like, this is a Strat. It says it right there, you know, on the headstock. S-T-R, I can't even spell. S-T-R-A-T.
Strat.
But it says it, man. Yeah. It's by Fender, you know, it's not really the thing. And for some reason, and my being a Green Day fan, like, I thought that Billy played a Strat, but I find out later. Actually, I found out, like, in front of the venue that they were like, who's the biggest Green Day fan? We'll give you VIP passes. And I was so confident that I was the number one fan. They're like, what kind of guitar does Billy Joe Armstrong play? And I was like, Fender Stratocaster. And they were like, wrong. Get out of here. You
know? Oh, no.
Yeah. And Dream I was like, killer. What? I was like, what? What do you mean? And it's a Fernandez.
Yeah.
So that's why I was wrong.
I would have never guessed that.
It is a Fernandez Strat copy.
Wow, okay. I always thought it was a Strat, too. Yeah, so when you said that, it kind of took me back a little bit because one of my first real big concerts that I got to pick, you know, was Green Day during the Dookie tour. It was Halloween,
man,
1993, Sports Arena. And my father took me, and it was pretty incredible.
Man, I would love to be there. My 8-year-old self would have like died.
It was pretty rad. I was a product of us being a Soma kid. Actually, I think it was 1994 during that tour. But Soma like changed my life, going to all ages shows and made me realize like what I wanted to do. You know, and just how you're talking about lessons, it made me think of how I took lessons when I was 15 for 6 months, and then my guitar teacher quit teaching. Because he had to take over the family business or something like that. And then years later, I ended up booking him.
That's sick.
By brick. And he recognized me, too. He's like, wow, you sure don't change.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've tried to reconnect. He's an older gentleman, my guitar teacher now. So he was an older gentleman then, and so he doesn't really tech very well. He's on Facebook maybe 4 times a year, and he'll respond to my messages. But I found a Michael Duckworth. He was in a band in the 70s called Bedrock.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'd go in there and do his lesson room, and he would have old laminates and Boston tour 1970.
Oh, that's whatever. Badass.
Yeah, he toured around with Boston and what was another band that Mountain. He played with Mountain.
Yeah.
And nice. So when I came in there, it was like, yeah, teach me Mississippi Queen. He was like, let me tell you about this band, okay?
Oh, so he'd actually tell you some stories. See, when I went, it's like he'd ask me to tape record riffs that I wanted to learn.
Right.
So I'd learn parts of songs or sometimes full songs, and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
You got a history lesson.
Yeah, a little bit of backstory with the riff, too.
Yeah, that's rad.
But yeah, it was basically like that, too. Like I would just come in and be like, hey, teach me this song, and he'd be like, all right. And then he would tab it all out for me, and it would be my responsibility to fill in the gaps and learn the rest of it.
How long did you take lessons for back then?
From 13 to let's see, I think I was 16 when my parents were. I was basically as good as he was, and my parents were like, I don't want to, you know, keep paying. You just jam with this old guy and eat pizza. That's basically all you're doing.
Right? It went from teaching to just jamming.
Just hanging out. Yeah.
I'll feel you, dude.
But it was funny. He would go around. You said that yours quit. My guy would go from place to place. And then it ended up being that it was too far. He started working at another place. It was too far for my parents to bring me to. So instead, he lived more closer to me, so he would just come to the house, and we'd order pizza and just jam out in the basement.
Right.
And but yeah, Michael Duckworth, great. I remember when I first met him, and he played me some things, and I was like, he's the best guitar player I've ever met in my life. Yeah, just on the bed's fine. Thank you so much. But yeah, yep. And then I took AP Music Theory my junior year of high school, and even though it was a senior only class, but my guidance counselor did not mention that, and I just showed up, and they were like, "All right, let's see if." I remember there was 30 something people there, and the teacher came out, did one of those things where only 10 of you will survive. You know, there's going to be so much homework. There's only 10 spots available in this class anyway, And they made an exception, and I was the 11th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's cool. Rad. It was really, really cool.
That like must have been a real gratifying feeling.
Yeah, he tried to scare me away. He's like, no, but I want to learn all this
stuff. My video production teacher in high school is like that, you know. Yeah. I know how you feel in that sense. Yeah. You know, it's just it's a prideful feeling.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then I ended up scoring really well, and like I still know, like, there's Michael Martin. He was also in that class, and now he's, I think I don't have enough air in my lungs to say how many like symphony orchestras he's in. He's
oh wow,
like sitting chair in like I think literally like 8 or 9.
Wow,
all across the country.
Just sitting Boston. In one's hard enough.
Yeah.
to do that. That's amazing.
Like one of the best trumpet players in the world. Wow. And he was in that class with me. And there's a few other, Adam Kennedy, was around that. I don't think he was in AP Music Theory with us. Maybe he was, but I know that he was around all the time, and he was in show choir and stuff like that. And he does like Broadway now.
So you're well-versed as music. All right. Sorry. As a musician, as far as your musicianship and training.
I wouldn't say I didn't go too much further than that. Like I did, yeah. I've taken. It's funny. Like I've gone to MiraCosta and like taken like the first half of like a bunch of classes.
Which one did you go to? Oceanside.
Yeah.
That's exactly where I went and studied recording arts and music.
Yep.
Before I dropped out to run Brick.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went for a couple and the people that I met too. I remember I met this kid Ian Kelly. He's like one of the best guitar players in San Diego too.
Okay.
Not in any band really. Either like this guy is so good, like
really.
I see videos that he
posts like a closet case guitar player.
I don't like he'll play, and you know I'm sorry talking about you. but he'll play.
Shout out to Ian Kelly, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to Ian Kelly. He'll be in a band doing this or be in another band doing that, and just like maybe filling in for this or filling it. I remember he like played bass for somebody recently at a show, but. You know, he'll post these videos of him just in his room, and he's like, just whatever gnar there is, he's shredding it, bro. Like, he is crazy good. But yeah, I met him when, I mean, he was like 18, and this is like years, 15, 2015. I remember he was like all Avenged Sevenfolded out, you know, vest, bandana. And he brought in a Sinister Gates, like it was like get like show and tell basically for class, and he brought in his Sinister Gates custom guitar, and I played it, and he's like, yeah, you're really good, man. I was like, dude, you're really good too. And then he just like went from what he was then to like now, it's insane.
That's rad.
And there's a couple other friendships that I had from there, but yeah, I mean I'm not as good as like some people out there, like in, especially even in the San Diego scene, like I know Jules Welton, she'll run circles around me, like theory wise.
Oh yeah, she's hardcore, man.
Yeah. She knows her stuff, and
she's funny because like first time I met her, I was like, that bass is like bigger than she is, and she's right. Tearing like, that
literally,
thing up.
Literally her size, like that Reverend is like so big.
She's so cute. Shout out to Jules.
Yeah, shout out to Jules.
Jules, if you listen to this, you know I love you.
Yeah, she was in Stealth Jackson for like a couple months too.
Right.
And then I played with her in that Daddy Issues band.
Oh yeah, so
I made it in the CD cover.
I don't think that's how I necessarily met her, but I remember that era when she was in that band, and so was Will. Will was in that band.
Yeah, I was doing it before Will.
Yeah.
And then now it's like Kick the Princess or something.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
What an interesting
and
name.
Will's is not in, or Jules isn't in it anymore, and it's Angela Carry On. But
yeah, I haven't talked to Angela in years.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, but that was all fun. I made it in the CD cover and the pictures. We took those pictures at the Whiskey. And that night, that was the night that I met Bad Cop, right before they signed with Fat.
Okay.
And, you know, we're all Facebook friends and follow each other. And now they're like one of the biggest bands like in the world. Like they are killing it.
Yeah.
I also met Remington Pierce. Shout out to Remington Pierce. From... barbed wire dolls.
I remember her earlier incarnations of bands that she was in the 2000s when I was running Jumping Turtle. That was the first time I actually met her. That's funny that you brought her up.
Remedy Pierce?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now she's in the Bomb Pops.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that was a newer revelation.
Because one of them had to take a hiatus for a while or something.
One of the Bomb Pops?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yeah. So I just found that out like maybe a week ago. And I was like, oh, I'm so out of the loop. It's almost like I got hit by a semi and almost died. You know,
it wasn't Jen the other girl? What's her name? Polly, whatever she goes by. Anyway, shout out to the Bomb Pops.
Yeah,
I used to book them before they were even 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're killing it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's doing great.
It's great to see people hit that level of success. You know,
and that was all just one night. Daddy Issues had played. Barbed Wire Dolls had played, Bad Cop, and then I sat in for a song or two with Ronnie Lee.
Okay.
From one of the later renditions of The Runaways.
Yeah, that was like post Runaways. I think she helped co-write some songs for them too.
Right.
I've seen her jam with Cherie Curry actually before at Brick by Brick.
And it was the
singer of The Runaways.
The
for bass, those that don't know.
The bass player from Bad Company was there too.
Right.
I forget his name.
Cherie Curry's son shreds on guitar.
Wow.
Yeah. She was, he was her guitar player. That must be interesting being in your mom's band.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was the singer of The Runaways. No big deal.
No big deal. Yeah. No big deal at all.
Or imagine being like Joan Jett's son.
Right.
That'd be a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so I think we're around, like, my high school years. And then I was in a band, and we, some other bands in the scene around then was, like, Cartel and 710 Split, Nuclear Saturday. Our band name was Standard Grade.
Okay. And what city was this
in? In Atlanta.
Atlanta. And, oh, so we're going back to Atlanta now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, still in Atlanta, and the Soma there was Swayze's. That was like our all ages.
I love it.
all ages venue.
Swayze's.
And it was great. Like there was an earlier like location and then that was old Swayze's. And you say like, oh yeah, you know, like
well, that's like saying the dungeon for the old Soma.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now there's been three renditions of it.
Right.
There was the dungeon in downtown. And then there was the one in Linda Vista on Metro. So there's Union, Metro, and now Sports Arena, you know,
and now you know, like, you know, who's OG and who's not. And like, I play shows, you're like, yeah, I've seen shows with the old Swayze.
I'm not even old enough for the old original song. That opened in 89.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it's a trip. You know, like, now that all these years later, I get to hear the guy who started the original Soma and then the guy that took over for his position up until 2004 with a third location. And I'm a third co-host on their show called Union and Metro.
Oh, that's
all about the Soma days. And I mean, that's what inspired me, like going to shows, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
And seeing kids and bands opening up for the Heroes, and I wanted every aspect of that. And it took me up until, you know, I started working at Canes when I was 20. And 2 years later, I was like, I got my dream. You know?
That's awesome.
You know, speaking of dreams, you are living one. You were on tour.
Yeah.
And why don't we talk a little bit about, before we get into that, what made you gravitate towards the military?
Oh, yeah. So
before we get into that.
Yeah. So I was working at this place called Moe's, which if you're from the Southeast at all, it's weird. It's back then. Now it's just music in general, but back then it was specifically dead artists that they would honor, either like in the music that you would hear or like paintings around the restaurant. It was like just, you'd hear like a bunch of Sublime or like Hendrix or Bowie as soon as, or when, well, he passed away recently, but
That was like the running theme.
Yeah, no, running theme. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, I loved the place because it was like a music themed burrito spot.
Interesting.
And it's kind of like Chipotle.
With burritos.
Yeah, yeah.
Primarily like, so it's like a, that was the theme. Like they were known for making burritos. Is that
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, a, yeah. It's a, it's like a, just, you know, like Americanized, it's like a Subway type kind of place, like Chipotle.
That was a niche, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. It's called Moe's. Okay. And then you walk in and you say, welcome to Moe's. Anyway. Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, and it was right across the street from a recording, or a recruiting station. And this guy in funny blue pants came in and was like, you look like you'd be a good Marine. And I was like, no, man, you got the wrong dude. Black or pinto beans, bro. And he's like, no, man, for real, what do you do? I was like, I'm a guitar player. Chicken or steak, you know?
You just order your food.
Yeah, yeah. Get out of here. And then he's like, you know, you could play guitar for the Marine Corps. You know that, right? And I was like, really? So went down there and auditioned. They're like, oh yeah, you can do whatever you want. You can be in the Marine Corps band if you want. And then talk to another like admissions person. And then they're like, yeah, you're in. And I signed a 55 field musician contract and then went to boot camp. They did another surprise audition while I was in boot camp, said that I failed that one. I sight read for like 45 minutes and didn't mess up. And they're like, okay, well you fail. Good luck.
Wow.
Good luck at your first duty station, and feel free to OJT on the job train as you wish, but we're going to change a contract on you and have a good time. So I had no idea what I was going to do.
So you got blindsided.
Blindsided. So hard. And then the contract that I signed, you know, says that they can change it. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I ended up getting the job that I got, which was like a logistician, which is like basically like big, you know, big style Tetris, and ended up digging it and ended up just staying in, not really for me, but just for the other people around me, like just stayed in and then got out, decided like around my 8-year mark, it was like, okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to really try music again and then get back to San Diego. And, you know, I just, my plan was to just start a band and network, and that's exactly right. What I did.
And what year did you?
That was around 2013.
Okay.
So in 2010 was when I went to go take a job in North Carolina. And then at the end of that, I was done with that that contract as well as that duty station. And typically you don't get to go back to where you started.
Right.
Your third one's going to be like Okinawa or whatever. But I was able to get back to San Diego, and that was my plan, just to start a band and hit up Craigslist and recruited some musicians, and I had like a handful of songs, and like, all right, let's learn these, you know.
Stealth Jackson. Yeah, so I saw you perform at House of Blues with my lead guitar player's band. It was one of those Kelly McGarry shows or something like that. But that was the first time I saw you play, and then after Stealth Jackson, I think, I can't remember what band was next after that for you.
Well, it was like a strew of them. I think that
you went through a few. I know Avenue Army was one of your.
That was the last one that I like ended up in. But yeah. I was in the Roman Watchdogs for a bit. I was in. We had talked about Daddy Issues. I was in the Mando Shanks.
That's the one I was thinking of too. Yeah, those guys were fun. We used to play with those guys.
Went along, yeah, and we played with you. I was at that show, one of the shows.
You were in the band when we did a show together.
Yeah, at the strip club.
That's right, at Pure Platinum.
Right,
I remember that. That was a fun show.
Yeah, was that the show with the security element?
I think so.
I was like, what is going on here? Inside stuff. Yep. But yeah. Mando Shanks was go along with I was in Mando Shanks at the same time I was in Avenue Army. And when I was with Avenue Army, we did a three date little run with this band called Sleep Signals. And Max from Avenue Army knew knew the guys and Robert especially, and the other guys in Sleep. But Robert had just had a stroke, so he had to take that tour off. So the lineup that played the shows with us had a fill-in lead singer. And then flash forward, you know, to me leaving Avenue Army, and I had I was you know, on the toilet watching some videos or whatever, and saw a Sleep Signals video and didn't recognize anyone because I had not met Robert. So Robert's in this video along with a whole new lineup. And I was like, what happened here? So I hit up one of the old guitar players, Cody, and was like, hey, what happened? And he was like, you know, just life, 2020. I met a girl. I moved to Texas. You know, Sean Fitz is doing some like hip hop stuff. Wanted to like change sort of like direction on that. And,
which happens.
Yeah. And not just in the music industry too, but with every industry, you know, we're seeing it across the board with, people not doing what they were doing before COVID. After COVID.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, moving on.
I'm a health coach now.
Yeah.
And for people that don't realize that, they're like, wait, what?
What? Yeah. Just, I mean, people like, they switch gears and adapt and, you know.
Yeah. And some people just haven't gone back to work yet.
Yeah.
And are riding that train.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it, man. I like staying productive. You know what I mean? And I wanted to give back and help people during COVID.
It's good.
You know? And rather than sit there like a lot of my hired gun musician type friends that rely on music to pay the bills, I was like, I can't sit around and complain. Yeah. I mean, I have something to complain about. I lost my studio and I was in the process of trying to figure out how to open up a new one. And I got off my ass and said, you know what? I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to help people out and find another career, and I can always do music secondary. Yeah. You know, I've never had to put it as a secondary option up until a year ago.
Yeah,
but it's gratifying. I love what I do.
Yeah,
it's awesome. You know, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So, the whole new lineup, and then, then Cody told me, he's like, yeah, you should actually hit Robert up because they need a bass player. And I was like, really? That's very interesting. And then he said, I think you'd be a good fit, coming from his mouth. So when I called Robert as soon as I just pulled into Temecula, and I was at a Motel 6, and I hadn't heard from him. And Cody said that he was going to, you know, set up an intro, and it was a couple days. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to call him. So I did. And I hit him up. I texted him. I was like, hey, my name's Travis, and I am going to, I'm here. Hold on. I called him up and then I said, or no, that's what I did. I'm sorry. I texted him. And then, I was like, hey, my name's Travis. And I heard that you guys are looking for a bass player. And, you know, give me a call if you want or whatever. And then he said, actually, I've got a minute right now. I normally have meetings all morning, but you hit me exactly when I've got like a little bit of free time. And I hadn't even gotten dressed yet. Like, you know, it's morning time. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I'd sit there and talk to him. And, we'd have this great conversation. It was like 2 hours. And he told me, he was like, we wanted to find somebody organically, and you can't get any more organic than this. And Cody said from his mouth that you'd be okay, or that you'd be a good fit. It'd be awesome to, like, you know, have you do a playthrough. And he's like, what kind of bass you got? I was like, oh, I've got a, you know, I'm puffing out my chest a little bit. I was like, I got a Gibson double cut Les Paul bass. It's
No big deal.
Really nice. Really nice. And then he's like, well, you can't play that. Because we are Ernie Ball artists, and he's like, you gotta get an Ernie Ball bass. And I was like, okay, no big deal. And then like the next day I went out and bought one of those. I'm pointing to a Ginger Burst BFR, Ernie Ball, five string, Stingray 5. And there's 89 of those made. And I had one of them on the tour. And so now there's 88 of them that exist. And there was three left when I was still in the hospital after after the accident. And I was able to get one of them.
Right.
But yeah, that leads us up to, so I get the gig and they were like, hey, yeah, we're going to be doing this tour with POD later in the summer. And then I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And because I'd seen them, they had gone on tour with Memphis May Fire, All That Remains, Atreyu, a bunch of big bands. Hell Yeah, Nonpoint. Like,
so they're killing it.
Killing it.
Yeah, this is a good, you know, touring support act. Working their way up. Working their way up. Co-headliner and all that, yeah.
So, and then, you know, the POD tour coming up that is just right in line.
Well, better than, you know, our San Diego friends.
Right.
Shout out to POD, right. Marcos, all my boys, Sonny, Trey. Wolf.
So, yeah, and then so we it's a 60-day tour. We booked every, I think it was only like 36 dates with POD. But those were all the POD dates that they were doing.
How many dates? Sorry, 60?
60 total. Wow. Yeah.
That's epic. And this is your first major tour.
Major tour, yeah. And then we got about 12 or 13 dates in. Maybe it was more than that. Anyway, we were
You were out for a couple weeks.
We were on the road from the 6th to the 17th. The 17th was when the accident was.
And so. I remember talking to you. I hit you up when I heard about that. And I was like, so wait a minute. Did you move? I was like trying to figure out the dynamic. I was so like, because I went and looked up sleep signals and I was like, it says like, well,
Minneapolis.
I was like, Minneapolis. I was like, wait, what? And then you broke that down to me how it worked. And, you know, I've heard of situations like that, but I was so stoked for you, dude, because
I appreciate it.
You know, I've seen you bounce around from band to band to band. I'm like one of the few that just said, fuck it, and I'm just going to do the same band for 15 years. But I was like, awesome, and you're going out with our brothers in POD, and you're just going to have a time of your life.
Yeah, and then 421, the 18th, morning of the 18th of August is when a truck hit us, basically, you know, rear end, and we flipped.
What city were you in?
We were on our way to a show in St. Joseph, Missouri, and we were there. We were in town. We were on our way to the Planet, or, you know, because if you don't know, when you're on tour, you just live basically in Planet Fitness parking lots and Walmart parking lots.
Right. Yeah. Wherever you can park an RV or a tour bus.
Yeah. And then take a shower or pee whenever everybody wakes up. So we had just stopped. We had filled up for gas and we got back on the highway. And I was asleep, dead asleep, and then I heard like the most just unforgiving sound, like and like jolt, and that was the trailer being hit and then hitting into the RV that we were in, and I was in that back room.
What time was it when this accident happened?
Yeah, 4:21 a.m.
A.m. Oh, so that's what you referenced, 4:21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then it just took a minute. It's a, you know.
Were you conscious? Were
yeah, 100%. 100% awake. And then we flipped, and then I landed in a window, and my right arm and side, like, kind of led the way, and just, like, kind of like in, like, a, like, you think of, like, a effed up, like plank position, basically. And hand took a lot of trauma. Arm took a lot of trauma. I remember I looked at my arm and it was like just a C, like basically just like leaning over. It was so broken. And then we're getting like all the rubble off of me, and like you get the bed off, you get the, you know, whatever, all the crap that had landed on me because the bus had flipped. And then be like, what is on top of me still? And then you realize that, like, oh, my feet are outside. You know, I was, like, at least partially, like, just my feet partially ejected or whatnot.
Like, through a window?
Yeah, through the window.
Oh, like, my God. So it's, like, RV window?
Yep.
I'm trying to picture it here.
So I was sleeping east and west. The bus is going like north and south like this, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a window just above my head. And when we flipped, that window is now on the ground, and I'm in that window, except for my feet were on the outside of that window. And just kind of ground down to the what they are now, which is not much. But
and he showed me the blunt of his injuries with no warning, mind you.
I was like, oh, dude, check this out.
But, you know, luckily I've grown up around this. My mother was a trauma nurse growing up in the ICU. And, you know, I work at a medical clinic, so takes a lot to really horrify and scar me these days. I'm one of the few that can sit through a horror movie and not even flinch. But yeah.
It's gonna be a long road to go. I'm at least what they call epithelialized. So like I've got no more open things going on. But
when you say open, what do you mean by that?
Like as in like open wounds.
Okay, so everything's fully healed.
Everything is for the most part. Epithelialized, meaning has skin on it.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
and
I'm not bleeding anymore.
Right. But yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah. But I still can't walk, and I still can't. We're working on. We're doing lots of physical therapy every day, and it's going to be a long road.
Well, I got to give it to you, Travis. You're in such good spirits, and like just seeing you smile and talking about this. You know, even seeing that first video that you posted on Facebook, it just took me back. That's when I reached out to you. I was just blown away because I saw the social media posting immediately after the accident, and it kind of the band, the way they put it, you know, was very vague. And
right,
we're all okay. So you know, it sounded like you guys just totaled the RV. I didn't realize like you totaled your body pretty much. You know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but the thing is I did it. This happened to me while I was doing something that I love doing, and now, you know, it just can't be all for naught. So, it's just balls to the wall, gas to the floorboard. We've got to do it now. Like I've traded body parts for this and it's not gonna stop us. It's gonna slow us down a little bit so we can like regroup and do what we need to do and make sure that all the make sure that I'm healed also like in order, but like I didn't hurt my brain. I've got my brain, I've got my spine,
that pretty face of yours.
Yeah. I've got my friends, and I can still write. Yeah. I can still write music, and even if I'm not playing, I can get it down onto a computer,
right?
Program it or do whatever I need to do. So
nothing's gonna stop.
Nothing's gonna stop us.
And you know, I'm sitting here at the VA hospital, UCSD. I'm surrounded by your basses and your guitars. I was not expecting that walking in, and it just made me smile as soon as I walked in. It's just, and that's amazing. You know what I mean? And I got to give it to you, man. It's very empowering, very inspiring. Going from, you know, seeing that video, talking to you a little bit before we set this interview up. I think only a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And then you're getting ready to leave to another clinic.
Yep.
On Wednesday. Why don't we talk a little bit about where you're going after here?
Yeah. So I'm gonna leave here on Wednesday to do Thanksgiving with the fam. On Thursday, and then scoot on up to Boise on Boise, Idaho on Friday, and then I'm just gonna chill up there and relax and finish up healing. And I'll be close to the band that's in the Pacific Northwest.
Because you were in the, you were airlifted from the accident site to where?
The Mosaic Hospital Missouri.
And you were there until you ended up back here.
Right? Well, I was at Mosaic for just a few days, or maybe not even a day, and then I was transferred to KU.
Okay.
And that's where they did the surgeries and stuff. And the surgeons here have said that I'm super lucky because, like, so I had showed Sulo earlier, but I've got what's called a toe fillet flap on my foot, which means that they took my toes and wrapped them around my nub versus the toe skin and wrapped it around the nub to like to pat it all down.
It reminds me of Play-Doh looking at it. Yeah. That's the only way I can describe it, or like a freaking sandwich or something.
They did that to like save the length of my foot so that my gait can like recover
right properly
maybe in the future right. And I have like a normal gait. If I had gotten hurt around here, the plastic surgeons around here said like, oh yeah, we would have just given you a what's called a standard TMA, transmetatarsal amputation, and that's when they just use the ball of your foot skin to wrap around. Basically you've just got like this, like a club foot basically.
Oh wow. So you would prefer to have what you have.
Oh yeah. That saved as much of my foot as possible because my metatarsal heads were trashed, which is like the big knuckle of your metatarsal bones.
Right.
And all my ligaments were completely gone. Like they said that Jay told me that the top of my foot looked like somebody had just taken a turkey carver to it and just scooped it out.
And was the band actually physically helping you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So they were all conscious and everything too.
Yeah. Grant, Jay, we're like,
none of them got
getting
any
me out of the
serious injuries or anything.
Yeah. So Wyatt hit his head really good, and so did Robert. And so they were on the outside, and then Jay and Grant were like next to me, like in the RV, and Grant was the one that actually like got the crowbar from EMS and was like, you know, got my right foot up from underneath, and my left foot, we actually got that up from underneath from them pushing on the outside of the RV, like with their hands.
When you say underneath what? Well, what was it trapped underneath?
The windowsill, like outside.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. So it was pinned.
Yeah. I was like outside of the RV.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you were conscious the entire time. You didn't pass out.
Yeah, the whole time.
Wow.
I've got a picture of me like in the ship.
About to see a picture of this. Well, man.
Let's see here.
And I gotta tell you, for all the listeners out there, that Travis is a brave man.
Yeah, so like this.
Oh, whoa.
That's like my arm, like you can see like how broken it is. And then so this is the windowsill of that window, right?
Yeah.
And then my right foot or my left foot had already gotten out of it.
That's your right foot?
That's my left foot.
Left foot. Okay.
So the toes that were amputated in the middle, and they're just kinda like hanging in there in the sock, like basically at this point. And then my ankle bone though was completely flat on the pavement. And this right here is the windowsill of the RV on top of like half of this foot. So like it was like sideways like this and like round to like basically nothing. And then, yeah, I mean, and what's funny is in this picture, you can see I'm wearing the hoodie that I was wearing that night. I'm wearing my jeans that I was wearing for the show. Every other night, I was doing the quote unquote right thing and putting gym shorts on and keeping my show clothes, you know, in the trailer. And so thankful that this night I didn't, you know, because it saved me a bunch of skin. Because who knows, like what this side, because my jeans protected all this area, and I only have like a little bit of road rash
right
here, but yeah. And you can see like this was like completely that bone.
Oh, whoa. These this photo is pretty gruesome, folks.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie, if you have a weak stomach, I would never want to look at something like that.
This stuff,
yeah, know. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not something you really want to post.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're here talking about it. And That leads us to the part of the show, because we're getting pretty close on time. Yeah. But do you have any kind of quote or any empowering message that you live by, and anything that you want?
Put me on the spot there, so
you know? I know it's kind of a tall order, but if you had to give our listeners an empowering message throughout your experience, what you've been through, you know, what would you tell them? What would you say?
I would say finding the mix between what makes you the happiest and what makes the people around you the happiest, and finding that fulcrum, finding that perfect balance between the two, and just do that, and do that for forever, and don't stop. I know it's not really necessarily like a standard quote, but that's what I try to do.
Yeah, and you're doing it, man. Your spirit is very strong, Travis, and I can't compliment that enough or emphasize that enough. And, you know, I just stoked to be here, stoked to give you a hug, see you smile, man, and not wallowing.
Sure.
You know, like some people do. Everyone perceives emotions and tragedy different, but you're not looking at it like that at all.
Yeah, it just can't be for naught now. You know, I think of it as like I've traded, you know, certain, like I've traded my feet for, you know, like I'm alive, and now I've got to like sort of honor like whatever's happened by giving life hell,
right,
and giving it all I've got.
So where do we go from here? What's your next step?
The next step, it's kind of up in the air right now, but as soon as, I don't have much for you, as soon as I know.
And
I'm sure that I'll let people, you know, you and let everybody else know as well.
We'll follow up with you in maybe, I don't know, 6 months or something like that. See where you're at next year.
Yeah, it's going to be either by the end of this year or next. But
the band still wants to go full throttle.
Band's still full throttle.
Yeah.
And you'll see all of that as soon as we find out exactly what we have to do.
Okay. If people want to follow you on Instagram, social media, the band.
Yeah, Travis underscore sleeps is my Instagram handle. And then the band, Sleep Signals. And we're on Facebook, IG, Twitter.
And I'll be posting all your social media links and whatnot.
We have a TikTok.
There you go. Awesome, man. Well, we'll definitely be following your progress, and you know, I thank you for your time here. And that wraps up another episode of The King's Couch. I'm your host, Sulo King, and this is my guest, Travis Wheeler, saying, "Stay radical."
We'll see you guys.